the Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, David James is back at our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our friend Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Hi, Trevor. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, man. How are you?
We are all doing well. So bear with me here for a moment. Let's say the college football playoff chairman comes up to you and says, Trevor, I don't want to hear from any of these other loudmouths in that committee. I want to hear from you. I want you to help me make the decision on who deserves to be in the college football playoff. This is a two-part question. What would your elevator pitch be to the CFP committee to include Vanderbilt in the college football playoff? And on the other hand, what would be your elevator pitch to exclude Vanderbilt from the college football playoff?
My elevator pitch to include them would be that they've got two losses, all right, but they were both on the road to ranked teams. You know, they lost at Alabama, and that was not a great performance by Vandy. But then they lost by a field goal on the road at Texas, and that's it. They went through the rest of their SEC schedule as undefeated, except for those two road teams. So they were great, and they won at Tennessee, big win against a rival where I believe Tennessee was favored in that game. Either way, it was a close.
They were
close in terms of the spread, but you say Tennessee was favored.
Tennessee was favored by what, 2.5?
Yeah,
something
yeah.
like that. Yeah,
2.5.
Okay,
for three.
Good. Yeah. So that's my elevator pitch for them. I mean, they went, they swept through their SEC schedule except for two really difficult road games, and even Texas A&M could not win at Texas. So my elevator pitch against Vandy making it was that okay, they're competing with other 10-2 teams. And while their losses are better than most of those teams, they also have wins that don't include Georgia because they didn't play Georgia, right? They didn't play Texas A&M. These are some of the best teams in the SEC that they didn't have to face. They didn't play Oklahoma. And so, yeah, they swept through their SEC schedule, but they missed most of the best teams, even though they did face Alabama, Texas, and Tennessee.
Trevor, rank these three quarterbacks in how you would vote on them for the Heisman Trophy. Fernando Mendoza, Julian Sayin, and Diego Pavia.
I would put, right now, after the Tennessee game, I would put Diego Pavia at number one. Vandy is much improved, and I think there's so much attention on Pavia that people don't pay enough attention to how well the defense has been playing, and the rest of the offense around Pavia has been. But the fact remains that Pavia still is the heart and soul of this team. He led the team in rushing, I think, 7 out of the 12 games this year. And so it's not just that he's going to get done with his arm. And then his superpower of being able to extend drives, keep his defense on the sideline while they're wearing down the opposing defense. His ability to convert third and fourth down is almost magical. And I think you put all those things together, and it's not just that he has elevated them on the field, but he has also elevated Vandy's program into the culture of college football and the culture locally of Nashville. And the Heisman is supposed to go to the most outstanding college football player, not the best quarterback on the best team, although that's what happens a lot. But I think that from a standpoint of most outstanding on the field and what he's done to elevate the program, after I think a Heisman game against Tennessee, I would say Diego Pavia should be the first consideration if I had a vote, which I don't because I moved to Tennessee and there's no votes available in the South.
Well, he proved in that Tennessee game that his name should be elevated with Mendoza and Sane as far as candidates to win the Heisman Trophy. Now, back on Vandy as far as their playoff chances, what needs to happen for Vandy to secure space? Because they did what they needed to do. They won big in Knoxville, and they showed that they were the better team in a powerhouse in the SEC. But beyond that, what else needs to happen for Vandy to get in?
Well, the way the rankings are stacked right now, Derek, I think they'd have to have a spaceship come down from outer space and abduct several teams in front of them, because you've got to be in the top 10 this year in order to make it, because there are two conference champions that will be among the five highest ranked that will come from outside the top 12. And so 11 and 12 in the final ranking won't be in the playoff. They'll get bounced out by those two conference champions moving up. So you got to be in the top 10. And so would Alabama, you know, be supplanted by Vanderbilt? Well, no, because Alabama beat Vanderbilt. But what about Notre Dame? Well, you can make a good case that Vanderbilt should be in instead of Notre Dame. But Notre Dame's at number 9 in their ranking last week. Vandy at number 14. And they may move up after the Tennessee win. We'll see. There's not a lot of space to move up. But even if you think that Vandy is better than Notre Dame, and Vandy had that great win against Tennessee while Notre Dame beat Stanford in the final week of the regular season, the thing is, the committee has already baked all that into the cake. In other words, the committee has already said that Notre Dame is clearly better in their eyes than Vanderbilt, and Notre Dame did nothing to take that opinion away from the committee. And Vanderbilt, even though they won at Tennessee, there's just no space to move up. Same way with Ole Miss. I mean, the committee might think that Ole Miss won't be the same team with all the coaching upheaval in the playoffs as they were in the regular season, but they're not supposed to really do that unless they see it. But even so, I don't think that Vandy would jump over Ole Miss. So from the standpoint of what needs to happen, I don't think at this point there's anything that can really happen, because if Alabama loses in the SEC championship game, and let's say the committee drops them from 10 lower than that, you've got Miami sitting there at number 12 who beat Notre Dame, and there's a bit of a firestorm nationally for the committee, because both Notre Dame and Miami are 10-2. They both have similar strength of schedule, similar strength of record, and yet Miami is at number 9 in the playoff. Notre Dame's number 9 in the playoff. Miami right now is sitting at number 12 outside the playoff. And I think Miami will get the benefit of the doubt over Vanderbilt in that situation, because Miami beat a team that the committee will put in the playoffs. So it goes back to, what does Vanderbilt need to do to make it? And absent spaceship alien abduction of teams ahead of them, I just don't see it happening.
But it's to me, and we've discussed this, Trevor, talked with Trevor Maddox, ESPN. We've discussed this. I think a lot of it, or some of it, has to do with brand bias, because you can't tell me, at least, that, you know, if Vandy has Notre Dame's schedule and they win the same amount of games and Notre Dame have Vandy's schedule, there's no way that Notre Dame would be in the college football playoff. But I just believe a lot of it has to do, or some of it has to do, with brand bias. And when is it going to come to a point where, because college landscape has changed in sports, especially football, whereas, yeah, just because you have that brand doesn't mean that a team like Vandy can't win a national championship. So with that being said, are they being penalized because they don't have the brand, you believe?
Yeah, I think you can make that case. Notre Dame, since they lost their two opening games to two really good teams, I mean, Miami and Texas A&M by a combined 4 points, they've been dominant the rest of the way. But the thing is, their strength of schedule right now, Notre Dame, is 42nd in the nation. And that includes Miami and Texas A&M. If you took those two out of their strength of schedule calculation, that strength of schedule would go way down from there, because even though Notre Dame has dominated everybody they've played since then, you can't say that they've really played, with the exception of USC, anybody that's really all that great. And so Vandy, on the other hand, I think you can make a case, is better. Vandy's strength of schedule is 22nd, much better than Notre Dame's. And Vandy's strength of record is also better than Notre Dame's. Strength of record is a metric that describes how an average top 25 team would do against the schedule that you play. And Vandy's is better than Notre Dame's. And so, you know, other than looking at Notre Dame and saying, I think Notre Dame's just a better team, there's no metric that I've seen that tells me that Notre Dame should be ranked ahead of Vandy. Now, I think that, you know, from a standpoint of the committee, they don't, in my experience with them over the years, they don't say this team has a better Q factor. This team is a bigger brand. I think it would be better for ratings. So let me put the better ratings team in and keep the lesser ratings team out. That never crosses their mind. But I think from a human standpoint, there might be a bias that, hey, Notre Dame looks really good. And Vandy also looks really good, but Notre Dame is just a prettier, pretty good. And so I think that's one of the things that Vandy, I think, has against them. It's not intentional by the committee, in my opinion, but I think it does happen. And when you look at just the stats and different things, you know, defense and offense and running and passing and all that, these are very similar teams. I don't see a real reason to put Notre Dame ahead of Vandy the way that the committee has.
Trevor Maddich is with us from ESPN. Trevor, here's another philosophical question that I'm going to throw at you, because you made the analogy, and it's a good one, that you've seen this committee show you what they're up to each week. They don't have to do it that way. They choose to do it that way. And you've got a colleague like Heather Dinich, who's really good at interpreting each week and saying, well, the committee did this last week, so that's looking ahead to this week. This is what to expect. Do you think that's the best way to do it? You were talking about the cake has already been baked, sort of. Why not bake the cake from scratch today, or you know, the last couple of days after everybody has played the 12 games? To me, that's what Vanderbilt would like them to do. Take a new look at everything. Now that everybody's played, forget about what everybody looked like in the preseason or week 4, week 8, week 10. Let's look at what everybody's done now. To me, that's a better way to go. But, of course, am I looking at it through Vanderbilt's lens? Probably. So what do you think?
I think most people would agree with you about that, Willie, but I think overall, when you look at how the committee needs to do that, do me a favor real quick. Ask me that again in one sentence, because there's a couple things there, and I want to know your most important thing.
Okay, the most important thing is, should you now look at everybody from scratch today, bake the cake from scratch, as opposed to bake it gradually over the last however many times they go on Tuesday and tell you what they're doing?
Good. See, that's a great question. And their answer to that would be, we do that anyway. They're supposed to redo the rankings every week as if the other week didn't happen and just do them all over again. That's what they're supposed to do. Of course, it looks like they just slot teams in and then move them up and down whether or not they win. You know, a lot of people think that the committee shouldn't release their ranking until the final ranking. But part of the fun of college football is fighting over the rankings. That's why I like preseason rankings. Of course, preseason rankings are based on very little hard information. But it's a place to start. And then we can talk about what things turned out the way we thought they would, things that turned out differently than we thought they would. You know, it's that. And so I think it's better for college football to have more transparency than less when it comes to the committee. And they're not supposed to have their first ranking and then keep the teams in that order unless they win or lose. They're supposed to tear it up and start over again every week. And if they don't, and it looks like they didn't, then the committee spokesperson is not explaining the way the process works well enough, because that's what they're supposed to do. And Willie, most fans, I think, agree with you.
Do you think that as we move forward with this system, that they should do away with conference championship games?
No, never. Never in a million years. One of the things that makes college football great for a century is the conference championship races. And nationally right now, we're basically locked in on the playoff, but also locked in on how the conference championship race a conference championship game would affect the playoff. It's all about the playoff, and that's fine. That's good. But most teams aren't going to win the national championship. I mean, for every team in the nation but one, they're either going to win the national championship or they will lose their last game if they're in the playoff, or they will not even make the playoff. And if that's what the standard is, then you're a failure every year unless you're that one. Whereas you've got a conference championship race independent of the playoff, and if you win, you are a champion. They raised a banner. Your name is now in history with your school. I think it's fantastic that conference championships are still honored by the playoff system, where the top five highest-ranked conference champions get an automatic berth. Now, Nick Saban has posited that maybe you should get an automatic berth if you're one of the top five highest-ranked conference champions only if you're also ranked in the committee's top 15. And I can see that because this year the group of five champion is going to be outside the top 15, whoever that is. And it's possible that the ACC champion is five-loss Duke. Now, if that happens, it's also possible that if JMU wins the Sun Belt, that Duke doesn't make that an ACC champion Duke doesn't make the playoff at all. And that's a whole different discussion because then you'd have two group of five, whoever wins the American and JMU if they win the Sun Belt. But if JMU doesn't win the Sun Belt, if Troy beats them with, I think, four losses, and if Duke wins the ACC, then you're looking at a five-loss team as a conference champion getting an automatic berth into the playoff, and I love it.
Because I do too, Trevor.
Relevance of conference championships.
Of course you love it.
I do too, says the host born in Durham, North Carolina. Trevor Maddich has been our guest on DMA's Ving and Adonic. He joins us every week, and he is brought to you by the Houston Clinic Orthopedics when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
615-737-1025 also. A programming note, a little birdie named Chase McCabe has informed me that Clark Lee will join our program tomorrow at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock tomorrow.
4 o'clock.
Very nice. Very nice.
So we will have Clark Lee on the program. We will get his reaction to the latest CFP rankings. That's tomorrow at 4. 615-737-1025 will react to Trevor. Barry Trotz coming up at the top of the hour. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Ving, 1025 The Game.